Hi, my name is Rutendo Nyamwanda, and welcome to another episode of In My 20s. In My 20s! So today's episode, what can you expect? A lot of singing, a lot of dancing, Oprah, Beyonce, everyone is here, everyone's names are going to be mentioned, so just sit back, relax, and here is the incredible guest on the show.
I'm Estee de Villiers. Mm-hmm. So I've just recently started freelancing. Very exciting. Before that, I was social media manager at Cape Town Tourism. And before that, that's where I met Rutendo. We both worked together at Cordova, where they do lots of TV shows. I was working on Afternoon Express. She was working at Expresso. It's the start of a love story. It's a beautiful tale.
A tale of two people.
Right. And a whole big company with lots of lovely people in it. And yeah, so that I think that's my elevator pitch at this time. At the moment, I'm focusing on freelancing, creating content, and content creator, and on my side projects. Mm-hmm. Most recently, a new Instagram magazine that I've co-founded with a friend called This Is Moi.
I've realized that on every single episode of the show, there are incredible mind moments or moments of epiphanies where a guest will say something on the show that will resonate with me. And this is just one of them.
Nah. But also, what does that mean to be drunk in love? Like, she wasn't literally drinking. She wasn't drunk. Yeah. It's just like the feeling.
But now I'm also like, okay, so she was crazy in love, drunk in love. Is she going to be hungover in love next?
Ooh. Yeah. Mind moment. Mind moment. The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we really get to hear a little bit about Estee's career journey and some of the lessons she learned along the way. In the second section, we delve into today's topic, which is all about finding your thing. And as most conversations naturally happen with friends, Estee and I somehow segued into a discussion about race in South Africa, which for me was really, really interesting. Rounding up all three sections is what this podcast is all about, and that is discussions and conversations with people in their 20s about being in your 20s. So without any further delay, let's get straight into it.
You have worked at a number of places.
Yes.
It's like a very different generation and period, because I think our parents' generation, you would have one job and one career, and you could be there for like 20 years, 30 years, get the golden pen, get the handshake, and that was like an honor.
Yes.
Like how, like for you, like how has that changed, and what is the importance of needing to move, or why did you move to different companies?
Yes. Okay, that's a very good question. I feel like with social media, I think you kind of have to change quite often because I feel like you need to keep on challenging yourself. You need to take on new brands. You need to kind of like step up your game every single time you change, because every time you're challenging yourself and you're being like, what more can I do? Also, you don't, you like when you know a brand and you know what's going on, it kind of becomes a bit more same thing.
Okay.
When you go to a new one, you kind of have to be like, okay, I get to know that. And then what can I bring to the table that's new? What can I change? What can I improve?
What's happening very interesting that I worked through is the season of work where we have really older people, a lot older people, and we have a younger generation who's entering the workforce. There is a clash of tension between the middle ground of people of the older generation saying, you have to work out your time, you have to pay your dues, you have to work your time before you can before you can reach to the top. And the younger generation of instant gratification to a certain extent, who are like, but I can do all the tasks and then can I not reach it quicker? And there's that like little contention in between. Have you felt that? Have you experienced that?
Yes, definitely. I think that's possibly the reason why I'm freelancing now, is because I was like, the whole thing of having to be in the office every single day and having your time managed rather than your goals or your deliveries, it is frustrating. And I feel like the world is moving into a place where it is becoming more flexi time. Even in Cape Town, the city of Cape Town was trying to drive, you know, having more flexi time to alleviate traffic. And also people, I feel like in South Africa, I think freelancing is becoming more and more of a thing. And like in the United States, it's also more of a thing. And funnily enough, more women freelance because they need flexibility. I mean, women who want to have kids, women who want to have, you know, time. And it's like, if you can do something in 2 hours, why would you need to sit in an office for 8 hours? It doesn't make any sense. And it is kind of counterproductive, especially if you're a creative person that gets very frustrated with having to sit behind a computer and do things that you can be doing a lot faster somewhere else very quickly. And I think that it is maybe the older generation is maybe just a bit stuck still, or there's just about archaic way of doing things. Because people think if they can't see you, then you're not working.
Then you're not there.
Then you're not doing anything.
100%.
like, oh, I'm really, really grateful that I'm not a teenager in this day and age, because can you imagine how tough it must be growing up in a world where there's Snapchat and Twitter and Instagram and there's all of the things happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And you have to try, being a teenager is already so hard, like trying to. So what I was thinking is what I mentioned to you before. So when we started This Is Moi earlier this year, it was about a month or two ago.
This is Moi. By the way, if you need a jingle, I'm your girl.
You're a girl, thank you. It's brilliant. So it's really hard and it's really tough starting something new. Like you would know as all of this podcast, because you look at where you want to be. Mm. You don't look at the work it takes to get there. So you think of, oh, I want to be Oprah. How do I get to Oprah?
So well.
Level Oprah. Can I get to that level?
Up to Oprah.
But you know, like, Oprah has been working at her career for so long. Mm. She had to learn so many tough lessons. She had to get fired. She had to go through so much to be Oprah.
Yes.
And you don't get to be Oprah without taking the journey to be Oprah. Mm. But it's not going to be there right now. And it's not going to be there in a year. It's probably only going to be there 2020, 2025.
Yes.
And you've got to have the patience to stick around and to do the hard work, because that is the thing that's really going to pay off. And you don't get to have success without doing the hard work. And that's actually the thing that I think is our generation's problem, is I think we're not as much entitled as we're impatient. I feel like we want the success now. And we are willing to work for it. I know some millennials who are some of the hardest working people. They will work so hard. They will bend over backwards. They will spend day and night on their work and then their craft. But they want success in like 6 months. Yes. Millennials are really hardworking and they're very ambitious, but they're just impatient. And they just want things now because they are a generation of instant gratification, of having things, you know, now.
Yeah,
yesterday.
At the end of the day, it also comes down to like the maturity of it, because you could be a young person, but you don't know, you haven't learned the people skills, which is something that takes time, or you haven't learned how to interact, or you haven't learned respect. Respect for your peers, respect for people older, respect for people younger than you. Respect up until like walking into an office space and you know the security guard's name, or the people who are cleaning your office, or the people in your canteen, the receptionist's name. What do you know about the people? So these people skills that you need to grow. If you want to be a CEO, if you want to be the head of your department, those are skills that are vital, because your people are your company. You don't have a company without people at the end of the day. And I think that's something that a lot of people forget in the instant gratification. I want to be the best, but I haven't acquired the time for the other skills that I need to become the best at X job.
Yes, that's all right. And Richard Branson, he was the one who also said that he doesn't worry about his customers, he worries about his employees. If he worries about his employees will take care of his customers.
Oh, wow.
So you gotta, like you're saying, with the softer skills and with your emotional skills, that's also something people don't necessarily like teach you. You don't go on like a, hey, here's an emotional skills course so you can do your job better. I would love one too. Like coping skills.
Oh, my word.
Like, I love Seth Godin. So he has also a podcast that I listened to recently. You know, it's not as good as yours. Not at all.
Yeah,
like, he can learn some lessons.
His.
But check it out, Akimbo. It's really, really good. But he was he's talking about emotional skills. And also when you're a freelancer, so obviously that's something I'm now trying to do. You need to, as a freelancer, you need to have emotional skills that when, you know, it hits the fan, that you are ready to handle it. That if something goes wrong, you are mature enough to step up and be like, I can handle this. I've got this. Because you don't have a manager and you don't have a boss and a boss and a boss and a boss and like some structure to sort you out. You've got to sort yourself out. And you've got to have the emotional stability to be like, cool, I can do this. I can. And that's also a skill you learn. That's not something you're born with. That's also not something you're going to get, like snap your fingers or go for a course. You actually have to work on emotional skills by yourself. And it's hard. That's the kind of thing that's really, really challenging. And I feel like a good lesson to learn also, a bit off the point, but maybe, is that you are not your job. So you I feel like when I, you know, when I had a job, I did a lot of time feel like if I did something wrong or if I did something good, then I'm good or I'm wrong or something about me, like I failed or I made a mistake. Oh no, it's me. I'm like such a terrible person. But you can't see things like that, because you and your work are separate. You're two separate entities, and you can do good work that doesn't mean you're a good person. You have to work at being a good person too on another level. And if you make a mistake or you do something wrong or your project fails or it's not, doesn't go viral and it's not a crazy success, that doesn't mean you're terrible. You can't measure yourself according to your work, because then you're that doesn't work. That's not a model, I can tell you. From experience. It's not a good time. Just, you gotta separate those two, because your work has to be separate, and you can work hard and you can do really, really great work, and you need to work on yourself as a person as well.
Oh, wow. You
see, that is such a mind moment.
From the previous podcasts, I have mind moments.
Mind moments, okay.
It's my aha moment, but it's such a mind moment because I think at the end of the day, especially, I mean, I'm sure I can't really speak on behalf of other careers, but as a creative, you are creating, so your work automatically becomes a part of you.
Yes.
But needing to separate those two is very important because at the office, there are requirements of you as an employee, not as a human creative person, but as an employee to deliver on your work and your tasks.
Yes.
But when you find time to, when you go home, for example, there are so many, I've worked in previous companies and stuff, but I would tend to take my work home and the disappointment home, and I would tend to take certain things, again, that emotional intelligence that you need to learn, is when a boss would say to me, I didn't like that, or can you change that? I would interpret it as, you don't like the work, you don't like me, because I'm creating the work. And that took a lot to go, learn to separate the two. The work is the work, and you is you. They're not criticizing you. They just want, they just had a different viewpoint or a different angle. They want to better it, and that shouldn't be something that you take to heart.
Preach. No, I 100% agree with that. I definitely agree with that. And also, that's the thing, is you need to like adjust your listening, because sometimes you do that. Like, when people tell you something, I do it also, you take it personally. You know, like they're saying, like you're saying, like, I didn't like this, and then you hear, I didn't, you didn't like me, or you didn't like what I was doing, or you didn't like what I was thinking, when actually they're just saying, can you maybe just change this one thing? It's not personal.
So we're talking about finding your thing. That's today's topic. And you went from working in a corporate environment to literally letting go of the reins, doing what everyone is thinking about doing, and working for yourself. Tell me about how that happened. How can I do it? I want to follow.
Okay, well, just a disclaimer. I can't talk as a success story just yet because I've only just started. I think I finished in June, so it's only been July. August is only like, woo, it's still fresh. It's still pretty fresh, but so far so good. Beautiful. So far it's been really great. So I think what is very interesting for me about finding your thing is that it's been, that's been one of the defining things for my 20s, is trying to find my thing. Because I feel like sometimes you get this messaging that people say, like, you know, you have your passion in life, or you have that thing you're so great at, or you hear these stories about Beyonce singing and dancing, and like from the age of like 3 years old, knowing that that, from 3 years old, knowing that that is your thing.
Yes.
And when you're like a bit of a jack of all trades, or you're someone that's not particularly excellent at one thing, but kind of good at a few things, it becomes really challenging to decide what is going to be the thing that's my thing.
Okay.
How am I going to decide what I'm going to do, and how am I going to like stick to it? So that has been kind of like really, really difficult for me. So I've kind of just gone from finding a job, one job, to finding another job, to finding another job, everyone kind of like just being leading by what kind of opportunities there are out there for me. Because I think I didn't have the easiest upbringing, so I didn't always have a safety net.
Okay.
So I kind of had to, for myself, find a way to be like, I need to be independent, and I need to be always secure. So security is really important. So that's, I think, I've always wanted to freelance, but I've never felt sure enough of myself to feel like, okay, I can just leave the nest, be fine, be okay by myself, not have a safety net, and be sure that I've got me.
Did you feel secure when you left it? Did you have kind of something to leave money-wise? Like, obviously, because no one can just leave their job and be like,
cool. Yeah. Yes, I have a little bit that I've got to, for like in case of emergencies, but also I have some jobs lined up. So I felt like it wasn't necessarily like, I think you are supposed to plan it a little bit better. So you are supposed to be like, in a year's time, I'm going to leave my job. I'm going to start saving for that.
Yes.
But for me, it kind of just became to the point where I was like, okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
I need to go now.
Was it like one day you walked into the office and you were like, this is the day?
No, it wasn't quite that dramatic. It was a few months that I like, so I did have some savings. I had some savings saved up, and I was like, okay, so in case of emergencies, I'll be okay. And I had some clients that I was working with, and I had some jobs lined up. So I was like, okay, it could work. It could work. And also, I've been thinking about it for years. So if not now, then when?
Yes.
You know, I've got to try. I've got to just risk it and take the risk. But I think the thing is, I think we're all kind of very still scared. That's what I think is also with why it's so difficult sometimes to choose the thing that you're going to do, because you, it is very scary to decide. It's scary to commit to one thing. It's sometimes like relationships where it's sometimes scary to commit to one person or one thing where you're like, this is going to be it, you know?
Forever.
Right? Because if you feel like you have limited time, you want to spend that time wisely. But if you love so many different things, or you have so many different things that you enjoy doing, and there's not one thing that maybe stands out. So for me, I've always loved photography and videography, and I think sometimes you find advice that people give is like, what would you do if you didn't have to get paid, you know? Like, what would you do for free?
Yes. But I want to touch on something very interesting as well, because you mentioned cultural sensitivity and also South Africa and where we are right now, which is very contentious.
Yes.
Everyone is sensitive to a lot of things.
Yes.
Everyone has a different story. Everyone has a reason for feeling the way they feel. What is your take on the sensitivity?
I think it's a very, very difficult time. And I do think that we're all going through a lot of emotions. And I think the most important thing is for people to keep on talking to each other, not just to their peers. You know, it doesn't help me and my Afrikaans friends talk to each other. That's not going to get us anywhere. It helps if everybody speaks to each other and there's an open dialogue. And also the importance of empathy, being able to know that everyone has a story and being able to know that everybody comes from a context, and we don't know everyone else's story, but we know the context of the country, and we know where we are, and it is really hard. Like, I mean, growing up, also, like, at school, I was in an Afrikaans high school, no one ever spoke to us about white privilege, like, hey, all you white people, you're very privileged, did you know that? I mean, you obviously understand to some degree that there is that, but I think with democracy, we were just kind of like the Rainbow Nation plaster, everything's fine,
let's
move on, kumbaya, everybody's cool, you know, and I mean, that was when we were, like, in primary school, and we were all very much feeling like, yay, everything's so amazing. But now I think we're growing up, and we have grown up to, you know, and like the you know, with the fees must fall and roads must fall. I think people are angry and people are very upset because there hasn't been enough change. And blame whoever you want to. I just think that we all need to do our little bit that we can in trying to engage with each other, trying to see what difference can we make, because I can't change politics.
Yeah.
I can't speak for every single white person.
Yeah.
I sometimes get confused, and I had to have my friends tell me about, you know, white privilege, and this is how you, like, to speak about racism. Because, I mean, for me, when I was younger, I was like, when people discriminate against me, that's racist. You know, like, if you discriminate against anyone from any race, that's racist. But my friend kind of had to explain to me, no, actually, you have always been in a powerful position. You, as a white person, like, discriminating against you is not the same as discriminating against a black person. It's just not the same, because a black person has been discriminated against, like, for all of these years. And I think that something needs to be done to rectify what's going on in the country. Something's got to give, because it can't just, you know, what are we supposed to just carry on as we are now? Like, we live in one of the most unequal societies in the world. Like, how are we changing that? How are we going to fix that?
But also, I think that the other thing is, like, the starting mark for everyone else in terms of privilege and has always been very different. So the expectations, when you, even background wise, whether it's a racial white on black thing, or whether it's even black on black racism, for different people there is a different starting mark, and it's like everyone needs to end strong, everyone needs to finish the same, not knowing that the race for different races or different people of different backgrounds of privilege have been different. History that has put us in a position that we are now at, that we have to rectify and have to fix.
Yes, definitely. And we also need to look at our education system, like, what are we doing for the next generation? And we also need to be better educated, because I don't feel like my education did me enough justice for, like, learning about South African history. I feel
first
like I need
thing
to.
I learned in primary school was that Jan van Riebeck arrived, and created South
created
Africa.
South Africa.
There were people
Thank
here
you.
Before Jan van Riebeck. I'm so sorry, but they were. So
of course,
it's like, how are you teaching? How are you teaching history? How are you teaching our own history?
Yes.
We learn about the British history. We learn about all of the revolutions. We learn about U.S. history, but we don't know enough about this land, or even African history in general, and how honestly oppressed black people were. And if you showcase honest images and tell honest stories, then I think when people in their minds need to click, but also as an adult, you have to take the onus upon yourself to learn. No one's going to tell you. If you're going to stay in your privileged bubble and you never go outside the lines and you never care, you're never going to care.
But I think globally we're also seeing that the alt-right is making more of a stand on social media. I mean, look at Trump, look at Brexit. I also feel like, to some degrees, it feels like we're kind of moving backwards. So,
and, and because we're so advanced, you can assume that it would be somewhat easier. It's so much difficult. And also trolls on internet, trolls on people who just want to yell and kick and scream, make it so difficult for people who are trying to, and I'm not saying we need to band-aid it or PC everything and be politically correct or peace to the world. No, I think that there does need to be, some of the greatest societies and greatest revolutions happen because of wars and happen because of, and I'm also not spurring on fighting, but I mean, there was contention, and only out of the contention can we breed a really strong and positive revolution.
No, I get exactly what you're saying. Mm. And it's so frustrating. I mean, like, when you drive through Cape Town, it's still, I mean, we're still separate.
Yeah.
It's like the areas, yeah, when you drive through the areas, you feel like, and now that I've gone overseas and I've come back, it feels like it's such a slap in the face. Like, it's so obvious. It's like, you just, I don't understand that it's so obvious. And you're like, what is changing? How is it changing? But I think it is up to young people. And I do think that young people have to speak up, and we have to have these discussions. We have to have these kind of dialogues, and we need to intermingle, because if all of us just stay safe in our little bubbles and our families and our neighborhoods, nothing's going to change. We're going to stay separate, because apartheid was, it was made to keep us all separate, and it was made to show us that we're all different. Separate development.
Yeah.
And if we're all developing separately, we're keeping apartheid alive. And that is not what we should be doing. We should be fighting that actively, trying to breach borders. All of us should have equal opportunities. And that is what we don't have. And that is very frustrating. And as, like, as a white person, I really do have a lot of white guilt. Which is also very, it makes it very difficult, because you kind of always have this, like, push and pull, where it's like, what have I earned? What do I deserve? And what has been given to me by my privilege?
But I think these conversations, like, the importance of these conversations has to start with where you are.
Yes.
Like, what are the conversations you're having in your circles? You could say that you have black friends or white friends or colored friends or Indian friends or Hispanic friends or African friends from different African countries. But if you're not having those honest conversations with them and in your family, just to say, look, this is how it makes me feel. I'm not trying to make you feel bad or anything, but honestly, when this happened or in this situation or in an office environment, not being able to speak up and speak up and have someone listen to you versus for them go, oh my word, I feel so bad. Or, oh my word, you know, when you call me a racist, it makes me feel XYZ. That's not happening.
Yeah.
I'm saying, in this situation when you are talking down to me, or you treat a colleague different because of the color of their skin, or because they're female, or because they're male, that's what makes me feel I need to point that out to you so that you grow, but also I learn about speaking up and confidently and not taking it away to my circles of friends, where we're just going to fuel the fire of our hatred and bitterness when we're not actually speaking up about it.
Yes, definitely. And I think that, like, I was reading Steve Biko's I Write What I Like, and it was really like, it is, was difficult for me as a white person, because he does speak out, you know, he speaks out against white liberals, and I at that time identified as a white liberal. I was like, oh my gosh, Steve Biko doesn't like me.
Like,
what am I gonna
white.
Do?
I
think subtle racism gets people down more than out and out racism, because out and out racism, you can call it what it is. But subtle racism, it's those things where you don't know exactly what the intention is, or it's that feeling you get, or it's a little off, or when people use things like they and them, and then it's a bit subtle and you feel like you can't really pinpoint it, but there's a problem. But I think you do need to open the dialogue and speak to people. And I think actually with white people, they just need to listen more.
I want to delve into the quarter life crisis.
In my 20s.
And oh, when you know the song.
I know all the words.
I mean, the song is basically
so
in my 20s.
In my 20s. So catchy.
But speaking of songs, is there any specific song that you feel sums up your 20s?
Oh my goodness, that is such a tough question. So when I am climbing a mountain, I love hiking.
You do?
Yeah, hiking life. The song that always gets me up there is obviously Eye of the Tiger.
Oh.
I mean, rising up. Okay, it's a good jam. It's a really
I don't know that song. I grew up on hip hop.
Does it not make you want to do things though? It makes you want to move.
It does.
But my entire 20s, to sum it up in a song, she said, I think it's too hard. I think it's too hard to say just one. I mean, there's been so many hits. There's been so many.
Like a dream come true.
Yes.
I just want to be with you. Three, six, one, two, three, four.
Maybe it's Get Your Freak On, because that's such a jam. I mean, and in your 20s, you should totally
get your
freak,
freak on. Hush your mouth.
What a jam. Yeah.
Jam and a half.
I think so. I don't know. It's too difficult. Under pressure. That is what I would say. Oh, yes. Also under pressure.
Oh, yeah. Again, I don't know this song. I grew up on hip hop.
Okay, so what song sounds like your 20s? Is it Notorious?
Notorious. Okay. Very difficult. Very difficult. Good question. What songs are in my 20s? Well, obviously right now it's Chandelier by Sia.
Okay, yes,
like,
yes. That's good. You want to swing.
Yes, I want to swing. But those lyrics about, like, the 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 drinks.
Yes.
Because also you need to learn how to count drinks when you go out.
But that song is deep though. You know what I mean? What it's about, Raj.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About, like, overcoming stuff. I don't know.
I think it's
about
alcoholism.
Oh.
about being an alcoholic because you want to drink.
Well, I thought, okay, so to a certain degree, but I also felt like Chandelier was about like just being free.
Yes.
And breaking free, like through the chaos and the anxiety and all of these like highs and lows in life. Like especially when she sings the like I'm gonna sing, like when she really gets into that and she like hammers it. That for me is the moment of, if you think of something shattering on the floor, it's like you break the chains and it's like boom, and then like swing. So that's what it's been. That's why it's so liberating.
Yes.
Because I think the when she's talking about drinking and the 1, 2, 3 and party girls don't get hurt and all of those emotions, like that's what you go through.
Yes.
But when you reach a point, oh, this is deep,
when
you reach a point where you've had enough, then you decide to swing from the chandelier.
Yes, and it's not something you just do in everyday life. You're kind of breaking conventions there, being like, today, y'all.
Today. I'm swinging.
You'll better watch me.
So let's compare early 20s Esty to late 20s Esty. What would you say from a maturity or a confidence level, how are those two different Estys changed, or how do you juxtapose the two?
Yes, okay, that is a really good question. I think that definitely confidence. I think I've definitely gotten more confidence in myself, but that's also a choice. That's also something you need to work on, and that's actually a skill. And sometimes you do need to fake it until you make it. Like if you don't have confidence, it's also not something you're born with. You need to kind of step into a role, decide, this is who I want to be, and to a certain degree, you've got to fake having a bit of confidence until you can fill in that role, until you can fill in those shoes. And I do think I was very unsure of what I wanted and where I wanted to be and how I was going to get there, and definitely scared. So I didn't think if I had to give my younger self advice, it would be like, don't be so scared, don't be so impatient, and just, you know, just like ride it out. Because I think in your 20s, it is the time when you're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to have jobs you're going to hate. You're going to have to do a lot of hard work, and you're going to have to lay some foundations for things you don't even know you're laying foundations for.
Yeah.
And that's important. You got to go through that. You got to decide. And I think that's why I'm kind of looking forward to 30s, because I feel like this is maybe the time where I've already done all of this like groundwork, and I kind of know who I am, and I really want to like the person that I become. And also I feel like when you get a bit older, like I think you also go through a phase where when you're younger, you sometimes think your parents, you know, they're like, I think you go through phases where in the beginning you think they're perfect and they're like the ultimate human being, and then as a teenager you kind of like hate them and you're like, oh, they know nothing. And then, you know, kind of like when you get into your 20s, like if your parents had you when they were in their 20s, you start feeling you can relate to them a lot, because they are as old as you were when they had you, and you like, can you imagine like having to raise kids right now? Like
I can't
even take care of myself, and then like having like two kids, having to take care of them, having to like be strong enough in yourself to be able to give so much of yourself at that age, it feels so intimidating and it feels so scary, and you get so much more empathy for your parents, which is like, I think, a really, really great gift, because you start seeing them as people. They're not like these, they're not your heroes, they're not like these terrible people, they're like just flawed just like you are, and they were your age once, and you are, they're probably like what you're gonna look like in another 20 or so years.
Definitely. And I think that's beautiful, and that's key. It's like in your 20s is the first time that you honestly see your parents as quote unquote human, but in the context of not mom and dad, mom and dad are human.
That's a very valuable lesson, and it made me want to get to know my mom a lot better, you know. I was kind of, then I started asking her about, you know, where were you at my age, and what were you doing, what were you thinking, and you know, just like finding out that these struggles, like a lot of it is, you know, like a lot of it is very different, because I think the times we're like living in is so far apart. Like I mean, like the jobs we're doing today didn't exist, a lot of the stuff that's like we deal with every day, like our phones, weren't there. And then, you know, like, but some of the stuff was the same, you know, like your parents also had heartache, they also had their hearts broken, they also had to find a job, they also had to leave home, they also had to find their way and struggle.
Had to adult and have bosses and then have kids.
Right.
Like, if we're trying to think about how complicated it is to even think about having kids, they had kids. They were us. I hope I was a really good kid. I need to ask. Esty, what advice do you have for people in their 20s right now?
Okay, so I would say maybe it's twofold. So firstly, so you should probably start exercising as soon as you can, because you're going to age, and age is going to hit you hard. That metabolism after 25, it's no games, guys. It's no games.
Downhill.
Speaking from experience, it's not the same for everyone.
Is it a real thing? Does it really slow down? Like,
I feel it is significantly. I feel like it's harder to get fitter the older you get.
Okay.
But I was starting from a pretty low base because I was not a very fit teenager.
Okay.
And then I think also the idea that to be patient. Mm. So to be patient with yourself, to be patient with others, to just be patient, because Oprah wasn't built in a day, as the greats would say. Oprah was not built in a day,
Oprah wasn't built in a day. Sorry, it just happens.
I mean,
as you were.
It's just so great. So obviously you need to, you know, if you're aiming for Oprah, you need to remember that it takes a little bit of effort every single day, and that you got to keep on working at it. And not all days are going to be great, obviously, but you got to keep on working at it, and you got to do the work. And if you do the work, you will see results.
Beautiful. Yes. And are you talking about like work as in like once work, or work like Rihanna work as in like
so definitely Rihanna work.
Okay,
I mean,
okay,
you're
okay.
Work, please do it like Rihanna.
And that concludes today's episode of In My 20s. And really, if there is anything that I would want the listeners to take away from today's show, it's not only that you should work, but that you need to learn how to work times six. You need to work. And thank you so much again to AC for coming on the show. You've been a phenomenal guest. Thank you for sharing your journey. Thank you for sharing your heart and your honesty. For those of you who are new to the show, I usually end off by singing the In My 20s jingle all by myself. But today I'm so excited to have some beautiful accompaniment from Esty. So here it is, the sign off for In My 20s.
In my 20s, in my 20s. How old are you? I'm in my 20s.
In my 20s.
In my 20s.
In my 20s.
In my 20s. In my 20s. In my 20s.
How old are you, Esty?
In my 20s.
20s. For those of you who follow In My 20s on social media, you would have seen from one of my posts yesterday that Essie and I actually spent a significant amount of time singing on this episode. And for those of you who have made it this far into the show, here is a value-added moment of what happens when Essie and I really get into discussions about songs and we kind of just break away into some singing of our own.
So we are back. Oh, the sound is amazing. It's like a beautiful, like we could actually legitimately film some music stuff.
Yeah,
right?
We should do an acapella.
Oh, we
should. Hello.
Hello, is it me? Is that where you go?
Say my name.
And no one is around.
Richard.
Say, baby, I love you.
I love you.
Say my name. People always ask, like friendship wise, they're like, oh, you know, you get along with so and so. And I was like, guys, if you meet Esty, Esty sings. And that is the connection.
That is the connection.
Like, hi, guys. Like, who else is going to break up into karaoke songs with me?
Not necessarily sing well, but you know,
amazing.
Who needs singing well?
Karaoke mics were made for you.
I know. I'm also like, I can't speak in front of people, but just give me a karaoke mic. And I'm like,
hey, guys.
Hello.
What's your favorite karaoke song?
I'm so ready. Oh, there are like actually a few too many. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's some classics, like Bohemian Rhapsody is always a hit.
Oh,
you know, it really
yes.
gets people going. And
yes.
Journey.
Don't stop believing.
Don't
stop
believing.
That's one. I find Tina Turner. Tina's good.
And Valerie.
Valerie is really good. Yeah.
And then also, I keep on asking them if they can please have some Childish Gambino or Bitch Better Have My Money. But that little Asian man, he just will not listen to my requests. I just want to stand on a stage and be like, Bitch Better Have My Money.
Especially around like Payday.
I know,
like,
yeah.
It's like you would come down to your last cents. You will have enough money to go to the karaoke bar, pay the entrance fee, just to say, Bitch Better Have My Money.
Please have my money. Also, CeeLo Green. That's a good job. No, but this is great. I really love songs that are like revenge songs or like angry songs. I feel like it's all those emotions, you know, you feel them. Also, like Justin Timberlake, what is that song? Crimea River. Oh, Crimea. You were my sun. You were my earth.
But you didn't know the ways I loved you. No.
And the other thing was Irreplaceable, Beyonce.
Oh, to
but
the left,
but I just
to
sang
the
to
left.
Everyone
right?
who I was mentally in a relationship
yes.
with, but they never knew. And when I mentally broke up with them, I was suddenly like, to the left. Everything you own in a box to the left.
But I feel like Beyonce let us down, though, because I'm still like saying to the left. Mm. But also she should have just said to the left to old Jay-Z. I mean, why is he to the right? Why is it happening?
Ooh.
She could have another him in a minute. I know. Right? Does he not know? Just give her the jag back and get out. You know?
And don't you ever for a second get to thinking.
Yes, exactly. Okay, but he is the father to her children, so.
Yes,
unfortunately, yes, maybe is a little irreplaceable. Maybe she was lying to us all this time.
I know, but she also went through her seasons. Like, yes. She gave us, Destiny's Child, I'm a survivor. Like, yes. We didn't need men. Like, we're, here on our own.
Yes.
Jumping.
So I would mention, what was that song about with the line about the internet?
My favorite is when Michelle comes in and she's and then the evolution was obviously then she went then she did the I Am Sasha Fierce. Well,
yes.
Before that, there was another one. There was the Blue CD album, and then it was I Am Sasha Fierce, where we got to connect with her.
Yes.
And then she came out.
And then she
strong.
Was all damn.
And then she was doing something let me cater to you. Oh, that was still Beyonce. That was still Destiny's Child. But they were suddenly catering.
They were, I don't know about the catering.
Yeah.
The catering business for them was not
catering
a good one.
Is, tough. I could never let me cater to you.
No, sorry.
Do you want savory or something?
Do you know I was Next Level fan? I even got their Christmas album.
Oh, I think I also got it.
At the 12th day of Christmas, and then they get to me. It was such a jam. I mean, I really love Destiny's Child, to be really honest.
Yes.
After Destiny's Child broke up, I felt really hurt in the feelings because, I loved Kelly and I was how could Beyonce do that to Kelly? Kelly was there for her for all those years.
Yeah.
So I actually.
When they were four and
yes.
then three and then four
and then three. So all of that, and Kelly doesn't get any credit. And you're Beyonce wasn't built in a day either. She had a Kelly by her side all that time.
Yeah.
And then.
It's like Lord of the Rings. It's like, are you a Kelly?
Yes.
Are you
Frodo.
Sam?
Yes. Kelly and Sam.
You
know, everybody needs that wing person,
Kelly.
So after Destiny's Child broke up, I was a bit of an anti Beyonce fan, and then she won me back though.
Okay.
With
how did she win you back?
What was it? How did she actually win me back? I can't even remember. I think it was just. It might have even only been with Lemonade.
Okay.
I think she only got
she
me
came
back.
With Lemonade.
What was the album just before Lemonade?
It
might have been that one.
It might have been.
See, this is not true, Beyonce fan.
Water cooler.
Water cooler.
It was another drink.
Oh, it was the one with Drunken Love. Okay, yes.
I've been drinking.
I get filthy when the liquor gets into me. I've been thinking. We're doing the dance moves perfectly, by the way. And we're naked on the beach and it's beautiful.
I want you.
Nana. Can't keep your eyes off my bed. I want you.
But also, what does that mean to be drunk in love? She wasn't literally drinking. She wasn't drunk.
Yeah.
It's just the feeling.
But now I'm also okay, so she was crazy in love, drunk in love. Is she going to be hungover in love next?
Ooh. Yeah. Mind moment.